Welcome back to God Books. Today we are traveling to the south of Spain to get some sun and, more importantly, talk to Federico, a bookseller in Malaga's Libreria Luces. This is a bookshop that describes itself as an experience, a literary and cultural experience. Just last week, it turned 20, which, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while now, you know is a major achievement for an independent bookstore. If Libreria Luces could talk, it would have quite a few stories to tell. Not only did it survive a pandemic, but it also made it through a very loud, years-long period of a subway station being constructed just on its doorstep. You can just imagine how good that can be for business. But despite the odds, it perseveres, and it continues on its mission to promote reading as a fundamental activity in people's lives. On its website, Libreria Luces puts sustainability at the very top of its list of values, something I haven't seen any other bookshop do. They also do a million partnerships, turning the city itself into one big bookshop. They're 20 years old and growing, and as any 20-year-old will have experienced, they're constantly changing, learning, embracing new social media platforms. So if your summer plans take you to Malaga this year, make sure you pay them a visit. Hi, Federico. Good morning, and thank you for joining me on God Books today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great and happy to be with you, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for saying yes to this invitation. So for those listening to us, we're recording at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. We're both very morning people. And so I usually start by asking the bookseller to take me on a tour, on a virtual tour of their bookshop. So I was wondering if you could do that for me, maybe describe a bit, you know, the space, the books, the atmosphere in the bookshop, anything you think would make us feel like we're there.
Sure. Well, I work for Libreria Luce. Libreria Luce is located in the Alameda Principal. That is the heart of Malaga. In a building that is for AJM. It is a testament to Malaga's rich cultural history. The building was constructed in the 19th century and has a beautiful facade, which is intact. And one of the various uses that the ground floor of the building has had was a printing press. The Imprenta Sur was located there. And that's where the Revista Litoral was made. Revista Litoral is a legendary Spanish literary and cultural magazine, which has been influential over 60 years. And writers and poets like Emilio Prados, Manuel Alto Laguirre, José María Hinojosa are linked to the beginning of the magazine. And even today, the building still belongs to the descendants of the poet Salvador Rueda. So you can imagine it's very unique for us to be there. We feel we belong to that part of the city. The store occupies two stories of the building. The fourth floor is elongated. A kind of unusual shape. Bookstores tend to be more square. This one is elongated and have high ceilings. And of course, the walls are lined with shelves full of books. Another characteristic is the staircase. Upon entering, one of the first things that people notice is the staircase. It's a glass staircase. And it really catches.
What do you mean a glass staircase? Are the steps made of glass?
Made of glass, yes. So you can see through.
Okay. Yeah. If you have a fear of heights, you might be taken aback.
Some people prefer to take the lift. But no, most people like it and they even take pictures. Yeah, it's pretty good. Downstairs we have all the fiction books, general fiction, classics, as well as genre fiction. And there is also a children's section, which could be a children's bookstore on its own. Both in the children's section and the general fiction section, there are large windows that overlook an interior patio full of plants, philodendrons, palms, ferns. And that creates a homely, natural, very welcoming atmosphere.
That's really nice. What's your favorite corner of the bookshop? If you were to hide and read a book somewhere in the bookshop, where would you do it?
Probably upstairs, because upstairs is quieter usually. And we have some chairs and sofas that people can sit and read. So right. Yeah, the upstairs where we have all the nonfiction. And there's also space there that we use to do presentations, book clubs, writing workshops. People come and have meetings.
This reminds me of, I interviewed maybe about a year ago, a bookseller from New York. And she was telling me how strategic they were about placing chairs and seating areas in their bookshops, because they would think if there's too many of them, then people tend to stay for too long, was what she had explained, and not necessarily buy the books, but really kind of go there as if it's a library. But if there's none, then it's not cozy and that's also not good. Were you kind of strategic about that when you were thinking how many seating areas should we have?
I think it became like a natural thing. Yeah, trying to find that balance that you're thinking about. Yes, being welcoming, but also, well, using the space for the activity, for the commercial activity.
Yeah, it is a fathom. So it's an interesting thing, right? Like kind of things that bookshops have to think about from a business perspective, even the details, like how many sofas should we have? Should we have sofas? And I know we'll get to that a little bit later in our conversation of how you keep a bookshop profitable, how difficult that is. Before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, how did it all begin for you as a bookseller working in the book world? How did it all start? Did you always know this is something you wanted to do, or did you get to it by chance? Because it feels to me that every bookseller tends to have a different route to, to entering bookselling.
Yes. For me, it was a little bit by chance. I started as a language teacher. And I reached a point when I had to move away from the company I was working for. And that's when I decided, why not go to a different sector? So I moved to the book sector and I started working for a publishing company. After a few years working for several publishing companies, I started working for Librería Luces. That's how it happened to me.
Was it hard to get into publishing? I know a few people that have tried to get into the book world in some way, maybe working as editors or just applying for random positions really in publishing houses. Was it difficult at the time when you did that to start working in this field?
No, for me, it wasn't, because coming from the language teaching field, it was natural. I started working for a publisher that specializes in books for language teaching.
Okay, so that was your entry.
Yeah.
And when did you get to Librería Luces? What year was it?
16 years ago.
Wow, quite a while.
Yes.
How many people stay in jobs now for 15, 16 years? So it's impressive when you hear someone working in the same place.
I don't know, but in Librería Luces, the personnel is very stable. There's not much. Actually, I'm the...
You're the newest employee.
Yes, I'm the newest employee. Yes.
That's amazing.
Rest of all my colleagues have been there.
So tell us a little bit more about the bookshop. When was it founded, actually? And since you've been there now for 16 years, how have you seen it change over time? Malaga has also changed during this time, I can imagine. Yeah. And it's a very touristy place. I haven't actually been to the bookshop, but I was telling you earlier that we took a trip about a month ago and we were there. And I thought, I knew it was a place where a lot of tourists go, but I didn't have this image of it being such a tourist hotspot. Yeah. So I wonder just how that affects the bookshop over time, how it affects the type of people that walk in, and how you adapt it so that it caters for locals, but also for the ever-changing city that it's in.
Yes. Well, the bookshop, Librería Luces, was founded 20 years ago. This is our 20th anniversary. It was founded where it used to be another bookshop, Librería Alameda, that for some reason, obscure story, had to close. And then one of the owners of the previous bookshop, the actual manager, Jose Antonio Roy, they founded Librería. It was located on the other side of the avenue where we're at now. We decided to move years. And how has it changed? Well, probably the biggest change has been demand. The demand has changed. For instance, textbooks used to be a large part of our business. That's no longer the case. That has shrunk tremendously. We used to sell lots of books for university students.
And why has that changed? Because there is still a very active university in Malaga, right? Or am I wrong about that?
Yes, it's true. But either there are no longer reading books, or
oh, that would be a shame.
They're buying somewhere else. But I don't think so. I think basically the book is competing with other sources of information, internet, of course. And students don't read that much, at least to study.
Don't read as many textbooks. Maybe they buy them secondhand, or maybe they buy them digital in the digital format. Could that be?
I know that, for instance, in fields like medicine, it's complicated because the knowledge changes so much, so often, that it's hard for publishers to maintain, to have the editions available, updated. So in that case, they've moved to digital. Law as well.
Yeah.
In law, I'm through more and more tools for lawyers to research digital tools.
I never thought about that. That's actually really interesting. Well, you have fields like that where information changes quickly and you want the latest information to be available for students, for example, or for those working in a sphere where they need to have the latest information. Then obviously digital does make a lot more sense. And it's also a much more sustainable way of doing things than printing again and again and again the same copies of very big books with just slight changes, right?
Before you had groups that were 26 years in the market. In medicine, for instance, you had these books that were reference books. And of course, they were updated. You had 5th, 7th, 10th edition. But now what matters really is not that reference book, but the latest paper published in the magazine, but also the data, the research that the department is doing. Yeah.
And I'm also imagining if you were, for example, studying medicine and you would buy the, I don't know, big book of medicine for year two, it would be great if it was like an app on your phone. You get a notification, by the way, chapter 3 has been updated. There's new information in chapter 10. It would be a much more efficient way of doing it than saying another edition of the book. And now you have to figure out what's the difference between edition 1
yes.
and 23.
True.
How do you cater to tourists? Do you have books in different languages, or do you stick to Spanish only? And what kind of books do tourists who come to Malaga tend to look for?
We do have a selection of books in other languages, books in English, French, German, and Italian. No Romanian. Most of the books are general fiction or a little bit of genre fiction. Also, information about Spain, history books written by Spanish authors. But we've seen a rise in the interest, mostly by the young readers, to read in the original language. More and more.
Really?
Young readers are asking to be for David Balthor in the which is
that's amazing.
Yes.
What do they do if the original language is I don't know, Russian, for example, or
no
Korean?
No. It's mostly English, French.
Yeah.
Yes. Language
the more accessible.
More access. not only the language, but also books.
Yeah.
It's not easy to get in Russian or Arabic.
Mm.
I would love to.
Yeah, it's always a tricky thing to how to get at a price that makes sense for a bookshop, especially independent bookshop, how to get those books in the original language.
There's this young lady in Vancouver. You should interview her.
Okay.
Jennifer, she has two bookstores in Vancouver, and she puts a lot of effort in having books in almost every language.
That's amazing. Yeah, because I can imagine how tough that is. I remember speaking to a bookshop here in Spain about how they get their English books, and even that, even though it's English, and in theory, they're English books are everywhere now.
Yeah,
they're actually quite hard to get and hard to bring to Spain at a cost that makes sense for them, so that they can then sell them for at least a slight profit. Well, he was talking the bookseller I'm referring to. He was mainly talking about secondhand books and how difficult that is. But just that. Well, if it's hard with English, how is it with the other languages?
nowadays, English, French, and German are pretty easy. There are distributors here in Spain that bring catalogs for general fiction.
Yeah, for new books. Yeah.
New books, yes, it's not at all. They've been talked about more specific, those textbooks, yes, it gets a little bit more topic. But general books.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the making it work as a business side of a bookshop. Yes. That's something that I've been talking to more booksellers about on the podcast, because I think many people perceive, and I would include myself in that category, we perceive bookshops as these very kind of stable, almost institution-like spaces that will never go away. They will always be there. They're wonderful. They're these like almost like a pulse check type of place. Like if I go to a new city or a new country, I would always kind of seek out the bookshops to see what kind of books do they sell, what's popular in this country. And I never expect there to not be bookshops, right? There's always a bookshop in my head. And once I started doing this podcast, I realized how difficult it is to maintain the bookshops alive from a financial and business perspective. They have to be businesses that work. Otherwise, they won't stay in business. It's as easy as that. Very few bookshops are non-for-profit or, you know, some other type of organization. Usually, they're businesses, right? So as I started to dive into this topic a bit more, I talked with the many different booksellers I had on the podcast about things like Amazon and online sales and what that's doing to physical bookstores, large distributors, book price protection or no protection, depending on the country, all sorts of things. Also marketing and what they're doing around that and everything. So maybe we can dive a little bit into this broad topic and talk about a few aspects. First, can I just ask you, is Libreria Luces, is it a profitable business? Is it sustainable?
Depends on how you define profit. Yes.
How would you define it?
If you can generate capital, we're not profit. We're able to pay by the end of the month.
Yeah.
But we're not able to generate capital. A few months ago, the manager, asked me, what is our business model? And I said, I don't think we have a business model. I think we have an economic activity, but we're not a business in that sense, that we're not generating capital. We're producing capital. No.
You're generating enough though to stay in business, but you mean you don't make more than that, right?
No. Okay. And that's sometimes it's even, we've had rough patches when we've been on the verge of closing.
What do you do in those cases when that happens? You know, how do you manage to still pay your staff, still pay rent?
We wait for better times to come. Of course, we have to find ways to finance ourselves. Oftentimes that is very expensive. Later, we have to carry that heavy load of loans.
I mean, these are some of the realities that I feel like customers of bookshops should know about, right? Yeah. I remember talking to a bookseller in Norway who was telling us that when they were close to bankruptcy, really, they put a sign in their shops that basically indicated that and told people, here is where we are on the bankruptcy scale. Here's how close we are to bankruptcy. And then people, you know, became a bit more aware that they actually need to buy books when they go into the bookshop so that this bankrupt meter, I think they call it bankruptometer, could indicate something more positive. And while, you know, it's something you can do once in a while when the situation gets quite desperate, is obviously not something that you always want to be shouting about.
A bit lame.
A bit, right? But I think it's just important to, in general, for us to remember that the things that we care about, the spaces that we care about, they don't just happen. They don't just exist if we don't support them.
And as I said, this is an activity that's never been too profitable in history. Bookselling, but lately, last 20 years, it has been deeply disrupted by the appearance of other ways of publishing, the appearance of new competition for the book itself, other forms of distribution, the distribution chain, which used to be a chain, is no longer a chain. Nowadays, your provider also sells book to the pub. either via
Amazon.
Right,
they don't have to go through you.
Yes, via Amazon, or they have their own web page. So it's no longer a chain. It's grown into something much more organic and complex. And we have to adapt. And that creates opportunities, but also challenges. Nowadays, for instance, we can sell books and have them sent directly to the customer. It's called drop shipping. And so the book doesn't even go through the bookshop, which is great. But also we have other challenges that makes it interesting, complicated, and sometimes different.
What do you think from all these different, and you mentioned quite a few different challenges, right? The chain being disrupted, competition like Amazon and others. I thought it was really interesting. You also mentioned competition for the book itself. Like there's maybe, do you mean that there's other sources of distraction or entertainment that people can access instead of a book?
Yes, of course. Just like what we said a while ago for textbooks, the internet has become a competition. It's a source of information, but also the ways that people find recreation. You know, it's diversified so much. They have there's such a large, vast offer for entertainment. And the book as source of entertainment has to compete with those as well.
Right. And the book as an object is much more static, right? Do you think that it also has something to do with how, because now we have all these different sources of entertainment, most of them are quite dynamic and fast and you can access them very quickly and they move and they do things. Do you think that lowers our attention span and book itself becomes something that is, like I've noticed that for myself, sometimes it's harder for me now than it was 10, 15 years ago to sit down with a book for 30 minutes and not move, not do something else as well. And I think that that maybe has a little bit to do with how we are used to having a lot of different distractions and devices and things happening at the same time. And this idea of just sitting down or slowing down and being with a physical object that is all, it's just paper, right? It doesn't do anything dynamic. It becomes harder in a way. Like we have changed. Do you think that that's also in a weird way a threat to books at large? Or is that maybe an exaggeration?
To some extent, yes. In other aspects, I don't think it's sure. But to some extent, yes. And I think the main problem is the paradigm that governs consumer society in which more is always better. And if you think about it, there are other products, cultural products, well, let's call it culture or entertainment products that you can consume faster. How many tweets can you consume in the time that you read a book?
Right. How many Instagram, whatever they're called, rolls or whatever.
Or how many TikTok media
can you
watch? Reading requires time. When you sit down to read a novel, you need to plan not only for the time that you're going to be in that moment, sitting and reading, but you have to plan for maybe days or even weeks to come. And that's something that does not go along well with this paradigm. More is better.
Exactly. With this fast paced, like, you know, there's apps now that summarize books for you and give you like the gist. Here's the, you know, 5 bullet points about this book. Now you don't have to read it anymore.
Yes. Yes. I've seen that. Oh, it's terrible.
Right? Yeah. Terrible. And you think, but that's the whole point. The whole point is you read the book. Why would I want to get this gist? But actually, those apps tend to be very, very popular because there is this culture of fast pace, acquire information quickly, don't dive into anything, know everything at a superficial level.
But again, that's why I believe that those other ways of entertaining sources of information should be a challenge or a competition to the book. Because you said before, nothing happens when you open the book.
I mean, obviously a lot happens in your mind, but you know, I just mean there's nothing popping up at you.
It depends on you. reading is should be always a creative, or it is. It is always a creative activity. You put something on the book, the reader puts a lot on book.
Yeah, so, it's a lot more on you. A lot more you have to do the work. Yeah. Whereas now with the other types of content we consume, it's exactly
it's
that
more,
with consumption
more,
is thrown at us.
It's more passionate.
It's much more passive, yeah. How many books are in your shop?
25,000.
What was the last book you sold in your shop?
Actually, it was not in the shop. It was in a book fair in school this week. And the last book was Healing Through Words.
What would you do if you couldn't sell books anymore?
Well,
you could do anything.
Maybe go back to teaching.
What book are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a book on swimming. The swimmer as a hero.
Are you a good swimmer?
I am.
I can't swim, so I have a lot of appreciation for people who can.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a very interesting. Recommended.
All right.
And can I say something about that?
Sure.
It's about, well, maybe you put it in interviewer. It's great because it has shown me the power of reading. It has transformed. Reading this book has really transformed my swimming.
That's amazing.
My experience.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. It has given it a completely different context. Oh, great.
I'm reading this book now. I'm probably going to take this out, but I'm reading this book called Lessons in Chemistry. Maybe you heard of it. It's very popular at the moment and it's a novel, but one of the characters.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
And you know, this main character, she's a very, very smart woman. She's a scientist and her boyfriend takes her rowing, which at the time in the 50s was something that women did not do. Mm-hmm. So she's terrible at it and she hates it. It's like, oh, fucking rowing. Why am I doing this? And then she goes home. She asks her boyfriend, why am I terrible at it? What's the main problem that I have? And he says, physics. It's just physics. So she goes and studies the physics of rowing. And she's like, okay, it's this. And she's, you know what? It's actually not that complicated. And then she goes back and she's great at it. Because she's read about it. And I thought that's kind of cool. Probably not realistic, but kind of. Okay, final question. What's your second favorite bookshop?
What's my second favorite bookshop? There are so many that I really like. There's one special bookshop on the west coast of Ireland that I really want to visit.
Which one?
Been there yet. It's called Tertulia.
So speaking about Instagram and things like that, I do have to say that one of the ways in which I've noticed your bookshop online is because you seem to have a very interesting, or I don't know if interesting is the right word, maybe more fun and exciting way of promoting the bookshop.
Yeah.
And this podcast was all about, the beginning at least for me, it was all about, what is it like to be a bookseller? Is it fun? Is it really romantic? You know, you sit in a bookshop and you read all day. Now I know that's not how it is. And on your Instagram feed, I noticed that you actually make bookselling feel really, really fun. And you have these two booksellers, and maybe you can tell us who they are, that do these little sketches that I think are great. I know they did one about Breakfast at Tiffany's and really fun little sketches. I don't know how else to call them, where they show up at the bookshop and they're really excited about it. And I thought that was a really nice way to promote a bookshop by just showing how it can be a fun place. It doesn't have to be a serious, and you know, you don't have to be the smartest person ever to walk into a bookshop. You can also just be a very regular, young, fun, hip person, whatever you want to be. So tell me a little bit about the strategy. How did you guys come up with it and how is it working? I guess it's working well, no?
Yes. A lot of people are recognizing for the image that we project through Instagram. The person behind it is Laura, the young lady you see in the videos. It all started with the Caranibros. Caranibros is those images, still images that you see. The cover of the book has a face and you use it to create a composition with a real person behind. Have you seen it?
I have seen it. Yeah.
It all started with those creations. Laura took the idea from another bookshop in Southern France that started doing that. The public reaction was very positive towards those creations. She's very creative. She's very imaginative. So she came up with really...
And very talented. She could be... I don't know if she's an actress or if she's done any acting, but she's great.
No. She graduated in history, the university. But she is amazing. And that evolved to more complex videos and creations. But always, as you said, the idea is to project this image of bookshop as a fun, welcoming place. I think that image of the book as a venerable object and the bookshop of the temple, and which is some kind of esoteric rite, takes place to veneer this object, the book. That has damaged. Booksellers sometimes have tended to promote that image. And I think it has damaged. I'm sure that there's people who are more comfortable going to department store or some other places to buy their book because they feel they don't belong. They have to be very knowledgeable. We don't care. The bookshop is open, and if you haven't read Dostoevsky or Ulysses, Joyce Ulysses,
Who has actually read?
Yes. If you read romantic novels, you're welcome. Come on, we have books for you. Often, I feel in some customers a kind of a passive aggressive attitude when they come in. It's like they feel the urge to demonstrate that they belong there. We want to eradicate. Laura is doing a great job projecting that image. And it's also important as well, because nowadays the social media has become essential for any business. I read the other day that 20% of readers already in Europe choose their books from the social media. That's why we have also partnered with Tony. Tony is the other young man you've seen on videos. He's not a bookseller.
He's not a bookseller.
No, he's a bookstagram.
Okay.
You know the term?
Yes, I do. And I've recently come across it since I started this podcast. Yes, about the big world of influencers and bookstagram.
Yes, it all started with on YouTube, the phenomenon. They were called booktubers. And then it moved to Instagram, bookstagrammers. And now the big phenomenon is in TikTok. BookTokers.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And last
in a way,
year,
it kind of made me happy because it makes me feel like the young generation, the people that are on TikTok, I imagine are much younger than me. I'm 35 and I'm not on TikTok. But it makes me kind of happy that there's like a book movement happening there and that they're talking about books, even if it's a medium that, you know, it's maybe not something you'd associate with books.
Yes. No, but in Frankfurt, their book messe, book fair, in Frankfurt last year, TikTok was present. They had their stand, and there was some sort of recognition from everybody that they were a major player. They are.
That's really amazing. You know, my co-host from season one, who no longer is my co-host, as you can see, I don't have a co-host, is now working for TikTok. So I can tell her, hey, you can still play a role in the book world from TikTok. That's good. That's amazing, no? Like that we might have these perceptions of what is TikTok for, what is Instagram for, but in a way, like they're all just communication mediums. And if there's still an interest in books, that'll appear in whatever platform, whatever format.
Absolutely, yeah.
I love that you're doing that with your Instagram strategy, or however we call it. Because I've interviewed so many different kinds of bookshops on this podcast, and the one that I interviewed just before is a bookstore in Australia that has the same concept that, you know, we want it to be a place where anybody can come in, even if you're not a reader. They also have a coffee shop there. So maybe you just come in for coffee and you happen to grab a book on your way out. That's fine. And I think from my own experience of walking into bookshops where I sometimes felt intimidated, but I felt like, I don't know what this is. I have to ask a really smart question now to kind of look like I know what I'm doing. It is nice to have these very accessible, very open, friendly spaces that sell books, but where you don't feel like you have to be, you know, the most well-read person ever to walk in. I think that's really good. I want to talk to you now about an aspect that I know you know quite a bit about that I've never talked about on this podcast with anybody, which is sustainability. I saw that you were invited to the International Booksellers Conference to talk about sustainability in this industry, if I'm correct. And was it particularly about how Libreria Luces develops partnerships or works with other collaborators in this field of sustainability? Is that right? Can you tell me a little bit more about that and how sustainability plays out in bookselling or in the world of books?
Yes. Actually, the answer in yes and no. I was invited to the Booksellers Conference in Sharjah, in Emirates, to talk about creating partnerships, creating a network of collaborators. And it is, yes, it's true that I posted on Instagram linking that part of our business to sustainability. Because right now there's a lot of talk about sustainability, but I believe that sometimes there's a little bit of, even if it's honest, being concerned, and we cannot overstate the impact of our activities on environment, and in southern Spain it's become very problematic. That's something you cannot overstate that importance. But sustainability is not only about the carbon footprint. I believe that when people focus only on that part, sometimes it's a bit of what we call greenwashing. Sustainability is so complex. If you see the sustainable development goals that have been proposed by the UN, only few of them have to do with environment issues. There are lots of social issues that are intertwined with the environmental issues. We cannot say sustainability only in terms of water or climate change. We also have to combine and find a balance with our economic activity, our sustainability as a race in this world. That's why actually it's so complex, this topic, that we cannot look at it from one single point of view. We need to find every possible point of view and partner with other stakeholders in order to find ways of all together become sustained. Bookshops on their own, they cannot solve the problem. We need to partner up with publishers and distributors, but also with the government and with the schools. And that's how, as a society, we will become sustainable.
Yeah, it's a very, very complex topic, right? Because producing books, if you think about the book as an object, it's like producing any other kind of object cannot be fully sustainable. You always need resources and energy, and right? So if you just think about that aspect of it, then if you think about, well, books are a medium of bringing information in front of people. If, for example, you publish a lot of books about the impact of climate change, that is actually a way to drive action, hopefully, right? To inform people and then to drive action that could lead to, like, I'm just going to show you the book that I have next to me. I don't know if you know this book.
Okay. No. Right? Oh, yes.
Yeah. The climate book. I mean, this is a book created by Greta Thunberg, and it's a great book. It has a million essays about different points of view around climate and how climate change and what a complex topic it is. The book itself is very, very big, as you can see. So I could imagine, like, just the carbon footprint of making this book and of buying it new. And maybe you're buying it off Amazon, for example, is significant, right, as an object. But then if I will read this book, let's say many other people will read this book, and we decide to make a change in how we live and how we think about things, and maybe some of us decide to become activists, like Greta, or maybe some of us put solar panels on our house or whatever we do, does that then kind of compensate in a way the fact that the book industry will, of course, always have a carbon footprint? Does that make sense what I'm just trying to say? You know, you are producing something that could, in some cases, create change. But in doing so, we have a cost. Is that, do you think, a way of thinking about sustainability in the book industry, or is that too far-fetched?
No. But again, I think that part of the contradiction comes from the paradigm of the consumer society. which for every need, for every emotion, you need to consume some. Right? That's consumer society. If you have pain, well, you have to consume a pill. If you're hungry, you need to consume lots of foods, or there's always a consuming solution for whichever situation in this society. And again, in case of the climate change problem, well, the solution might be within this paradigm, well, consume books that talk about the climate change problem, when probably in many cases the solution would be to consume less.
So let me ask you something here that is actually a dilemma of mine about sustainability and books. Is it better, in your opinion, being in both of these worlds, caring about sustainability but also selling books? Should we buy then books secondhand because that's maybe more sustainable, but it's not really supporting the book industry in the best way possible, right? Because if I want to support authors and independent bookshops that sell new books, probably I should go to those bookshops and buy the book new. But if I care about the environment, maybe I'm thinking to get all of my books secondhand.
Secondhand is great. We've thought about having secondhand books, but here in Spain, there's not a culture of mixing the two. In other places, in the United States, it's very common to have, for bookshops, to have a secondhand section. And we think it's great. It's wonderful. We would if we could. So that shouldn't be the dilemma. If you want to buy secondhand books, yeah, go ahead. If you want to go to the library, we support people going to the library. We collaborate with libraries. Yeah, it's a great way of getting your books and put them back and use them. That's what in schools, we collaborate with the school libraries and we support them for it.
So there's no competition here between secondhand.
There's no competition. No, and that shouldn't be the dilemma.
All right. I put this dilemma to the side then.
And I wanted to answer the second part of the question. It's collaboration. It's cooperation and partnerships that I went to Sharjah to talk about. It was very interesting because for us, it all started when we were in the other location, the other side of the avenue. In 2015, the local government started works to have the underground right in front of our store. And we spent 5 years without a shower. Covered our facade completely, covered by
four meter
high panels, which at some point were 1 meter and a half away from the main entrance. So it was very hard for people to go in to see us, and the noise was tremendous because they had these huge machines perforating their soil, and the dust that would come in. We were distraught. We were absolutely distraught. People often tell me, oh, I can imagine how terrible. No, you can't imagine. I mean, if you haven't had this kind of work in front of your business, you can't imagine how bad it is. We're really close to closing. The funny thing is when they finished the works, that's when the pandemic came, the lockdown.
Oh, man.
And you know the story.
But one after the other.
It wasn't that bad because at that point we had realized that we would always be limited in our store. We're limited by the size of the bookstore, the square meters that we have. That's a limit. We cannot put more books on the shelves than those that fit. We're limited by the hours. We cannot open more than the hours that local government allows us to. Even by the logistics business, we cannot have more people go through the register than the process allows us to. So we realized we would always be limited, and that there were external elements that would affect and even put more pressure on those limits, like weather conditions or traffic, which had. So we decided that we had to expand, that we wanted to make the city to be the bookshop. But for that, we need partners. We cannot do that on our own. We need to partner up with our schools, with our businesses, clubs, with other institutions. And that's what I do. The most interesting thing about the conversation with I had with other booksellers in Sharjah is that we all agree that in order to have long-lasting partnership relationships, because it's a long-term goal, you need to have a vision. You cannot focus on the short term, on the immediate profit. You have to create on more value, adding value to their relationship. And that's something that oftentimes is not related to the financial profit.
Or at least not in the short run, I'd imagine. Yes. Yeah. Yes. What are some of these partnerships that you'd say you're most proud of or that have brought the most to your bookshop or to the city?
With schools, where a lot of schools trying to project the image of the library and the books. We bring books to schools with the book fairs. We also invite groups of students to come to the bookshop and they do activities in the bookshop. Gymkhana. It's great because that allows students that would normally wouldn't come into a bookshop to get to know the space and the offer. It's great to see them sometimes excited because they found out we have books about heavy rock metal or or about sports or video games.
Something they care about, books, right? Like making that connection between something they already
books
love.
Books about the people they follow on Instagram or the YouTubers. Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah, that's the idea for them to realize that no matter what their interests are, they will always find a book that can copy that and such like that interest.
And then maybe that's a way to like hook them in and then they find other books about us.
Hopefully, yes. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about books since we're on the topic. What are some of the top sellers in your shop? What kind of books do people in Malaga read these days? Let's say in the last couple of months, what have you sold most?
Fiction, yes. Genre fiction is always, it varies. There are sometimes when historic novels have been the most demanded. At some point it shifted to romantic novel and erotic. And that's when the 50 Shades of Grey.
Really? Oh, okay. Were erotic novels bestsellers in your shop?
Yes, he created a wave of erotic novel, which is great. And
how do people, because I have to admit I've never bought one, but I'm just wondering, when people come to buy erotic novels, are they very upfront about it? Do they come and just ask you for it? Or do you sense some shame and guilt?
Oh, no. There's always a bit of taboo. It shouldn't, that those novels is. And yes, right now, thrillers are very popular. The best selling also is from Malaga, Spanish. Oh, it's from Malaga.
Who's that?
Javier Castillo.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's one of your best selling authors.
Yes. In all over Spain.
And do these books that you sell, do they match what you would hope to sell? If you were to make a wish, what kind of books would you love it if people came in to your bookshop looking for a little bit more often than they do?
I'm for variety. Most of our books, we sell one copy. Yes.
All right.
It's more than 50%.
That you just sell one copy of each?
We sell just one copy.
So that does that mean that you only order one copy? You just have one and if when it's sold, it's gone? Or do you have?
Yes, in some cases we have one or two, but yes.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I have a final book question for you, which I started to ask booksellers about 2 episodes ago. Seems to be a question that takes people by surprise a bit. So let's see how you feel about it. If you had the power as a bookseller to get everybody in the world to read one book, we would all read it, all of us, what would that book be and why would you choose it?
I wouldn't want that power. No. I think we have to eradicate the use of verbs like should or must or have to related to book. It was 2 days ago, 2 or 3 days ago, I heard on the news that there was some public servant, some official, a politician, speaking about the importance of reading and the importance of reading in the early stages of the education, so that they were going to make reading compulsory for half an hour every day at school. And that's terrible. I know it's well-intended. It loses its nature. Then you're not reading because it's pleasurable or because it's a way of inform yourself. It's only because you have.
I definitely see your point.
I believe that it's one of the easiest, best, most effective ways to make bad readers.
Non-readers when they grow up, to make it
compulsory.
I think you're definitely right about that. So let me try to rephrase my question. I don't mean it to force a book on everyone, but more like if there's a book that you've read that you love so much and you think it could have such a positive impact on the world if we all had that information in our minds.
No, because I think that the value of literature is its organic nature. And by organic, I mean the way nature evolved by finding solutions for specific needs in every situation. So I wouldn't be so arrogant as to say, well, this book that was useful to me is going to be useful for no. I don't believe that. I believe that the richness of this environment, the literary environment, comes from the variety.
Good. All right. That's a good answer. I won't push you that too much to give
me.
Well, thank you for our conversation today. This was great. I feel like I've learned a lot.
Oh.
Well, I will have a couple more questions for you that I will then insert into our interview as a little kind of quiz. But the interviewee part is going towards an end. Is there anything else that you would like to say to the...
That went fast. No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Please visit us when you come to Malaga.
I will. I'd like
to extend this invitation for your listener.
Yes, they should definitely come. I mean, many people go to Malaga in the summer, so we're releasing this just before holidays. Maybe you'll get some extra visitors. Thank you for tuning in today for my conversation with Clay. I'll see you next time for another conversation with another bookseller. Until next time, sit back, relax, and enjoy a good book.